everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we're going to talk a little bit about Tesla stock. We have an updated note from Goldman Sachs that came out in the aftermarket yesterday, unfortunately just after I had finished recording, but we'll go through the details on that. Then we also have a little bit of updated information here on the S&P inclusion process. We also get to talk a little bit about a couple of Tesla short sellers. It's been a while since we've had them in the discussion, and then we have a couple other stories as well. All right, so looking at the stock, pretty strong day overall, of course, driven by the Goldman Sachs note after hours causing that big spike yesterday. But today, Tesla finished up 4.3% to $593.38. That compared to the NASDAQ up 0.2%. And though Tesla's peak today at $598 per share was not an all-time high, the close of $593 is an all-time high close. Again today, this was on what I would call relatively low volume, about 41 million shares traded today. That's 62% of the annual average, and about 79% of the average for full days of trading since the S&P announcement. There are now just 11 trading days left until Tesla is added to the S&P 500, so I don't know if we'll see volume pick up next week, but the week after I would expect these numbers to rise. And again, a little bit later in the episode, we'll talk about that S&P situation. But first, I want to start off with this Goldman Sachs note. So as many of you have probably heard by now, yesterday in aftermarket trading, Goldman Sachs issued an updated note on Tesla. They have upgraded Tesla from neutral to buy, so it's more significant than a price target increase. And they've also raised their price target from $455 per share all the way up to $780 per share, which I believe is the highest on the street right now. They begin the note justifying that price target increase by saying, quote, "We believe that the shift toward battery electric vehicle adoption is accelerating and will occur faster than our prior view," end quote. So while they do change some of their assumptions here for Tesla, some of this is just driven by a tops-down analysis of electric vehicle market size. Goldman Sachs writes, quote, "In conjunction with our global colleagues, we are raising our outlook for EV adoption and now expect EVs to comprise 18% of sales globally in 2030 and 29% in 2035, with 50% adoption in 2035 in both the US and in Western Europe," end quote. They also have an upside scenario with 26% in 2030 and 40% in 2035 for the US and Western Europe, 66% and 60% respectively for that upside case. Remember, if we think back to Elon's Axel Springer interview, he said he's expecting in 10 years that number to be more like 70, 80% or maybe even a little bit higher. Now, I will assume that Elon is referring to sort of the developed market there. So when we're talking in percentages like this, it kind of depends where your starting point is. But even if you compare to the Goldman Sachs numbers for the US and Western Europe, Elon is, unsurprisingly, expecting a higher market share for electric vehicles by 2030 than what Goldman Sachs is saying here for 2035. And this is an increase, remember, that they're sort of basing their $780 price target around. So to some extent, they're kind of using that to do a top-down analysis, and they say, quote, "If Tesla sustains its mid to high 20% range share of the EV market, then it could reach 15 million units by 2040 and about 20 million units under our upside case EV market adoption scenario," end quote. This number is then what they're using in their discounted cash flow to get back into that $780 price target. And while I mention that, a lot of people ask what the timelines are for these price targets. Generally, if it's not said, price targets are usually for 12 months out. Goldman Sachs does here specify, though, and clarify that yes, this is a 12-month price target. So anyway, on their numbers, this is really interesting because they are, I believe, the first ones to really acknowledge or put in their price target sales for Tesla over, you know, 10 million vehicles per year. But then on the other hand, they're waiting until 2040 to do that. So 15 million by 2040, obviously, as Tesla has widely discussed now at this point, they're targeting 20 million or more by 2030. So what you have here is essentially Goldman Sachs acknowledging the total addressable market and Tesla's leadership position, but not necessarily recognizing the speed with which Tesla hopes to achieve their goals. This is where the next 2 to 3 years are going to be really interesting because so far, you know, Tesla has been able to add vehicle production and delivery capacity of, let's say, maximum a couple hundred thousand vehicles per year. Analysts are a little bit uncomfortable with nonlinear thinking, expecting that Tesla can go from adding, you know, 200,000 vehicles in capacity per year all the way up to adding a million or adding 2 million per year in capacity. It's just not something that they can do, you know. From our conversations with Alex Potter, they want to have a benchmark or some precedence for something they put in their model. And I think in a lot of cases, that's what ends up leading to what appear to be relatively conservative assumptions here, pretty much across the board from analysts. For example, in this note, they lay out their delivery forecast for 2020 through 2022. I'm sure they've got it by a year beyond that, but they didn't include it in this particular note. But for 2020, they are actually forecasting 500,000. So kind of interesting to see that. The street consensus is quite a bit lower, I think around 480, but we'll go through all that closer to the delivery report. But then for 2021, they have 850,000. All right, pretty reasonable. But 2022, only 1,050,000. This is how stocks like Tesla sneak up on people, like we've seen over the last year, because again, that nonlinear growth persists. And then the best part about that is what happens to the bottom line, because if you're growing revenue exponentially, as you capture more economies of scale, your operational leverage is going to grow even more exponentially. Probably not the proper way to define it. I'm sure someone will correct me in the comments on that. But if people are surprised by the top line, well, they're definitely going to be even more surprised by the bottom line then. And then there are these big moments of realization, which you could call, I guess, price discovery, where the stock moves into a completely new range. So we've definitely seen that over the last year as Tesla has become profitable and people have realized that not only, hey, Tesla's leading, but also it's sustainable and there's a positive base now that people can work from. So before, you know, Tesla didn't even carry a price to earnings ratio because earnings were negative. Yeah, now it's over 1,000, but as Tesla doubles earnings once and then doubles earnings twice and then doubles earnings three times, well, all of a sudden that's down from 1,000 to 125 times earnings in, you know, maybe the matter of a couple of years, because if you're growing revenue at 50 to 100%, again, the bottom line is very likely to grow much faster than that. So those doublings to earnings can actually occur, you know, every 6 to 9 months or so. The market's not great at long-term thinking, but it can definitely think 6 to 9 months ahead in terms of earnings forecasts when there is a base and some precedents to build off of. So in a normal high growth situation, you've got that revenue growing, you have earnings growing even faster, and then Tesla has this third factor of deferred revenue and software, which have this interesting effect, we'll call it interesting, but massive effect of right now suppressing the base of earnings because Tesla can't yet recognize all the revenue and profit that they're accruing. So the impact of that is twofold. The first, as I just said, suppressing the current earnings or suppressing that base that Wall Street is trying to build off of. And then the second impact is that this won't be the situation forever. Tesla will continue to recognize more and more of that revenue and more of that profit. And that's going to grow that bottom line, that GAAP net income, even more quickly. So over the trailing 12 months, that's been about $550 million for Tesla. But Tesla also in their 10Q says that over the next 12 months, they expect to recognize $969 million of deferred revenue. Let's think about if that had not been deferred revenue, if Tesla had already delivered those software features and was already recognizing that revenue, then their GAAP net income, their earnings, over the last 12 months would have gone from $550 million to over $1.5 billion. And all of a sudden, instead of trading at 1,000 times earnings, you're trading at about 370 times earnings. So then if you grow revenue, you know, 50 to 100% again, and let's say the bottom line grows by 200%, just speaking hypotheticals here, not a forecast, but then all of a sudden, instead of trading at 370 times sales, you're trading at 120 times sales. So very quickly in the span of 12 months, you can see Tesla go from 1,000 times sales down to 120 times sales, which is barely above where Amazon is right now at about 93 times sales, even though Tesla under this type of circumstance would be growing way, way faster. This is why I sit here during this 10x run-up and I just do nothing. Like, I don't need to sell any stock during this because I still think Tesla is wildly undervalued on a fundamental level, even in a relatively short period of time. Now, to be fair, if we are talking about earnings, Tesla is earning money right now from regulatory credit sales. That was about $1.3 billion over the last 12 months. So if we do our deferred revenue included earnings power, which was just over $1.5 billion, we take that deferred revenue out, well, all of a sudden you're back to earnings of a couple hundred million, and you're again back to trading above 1,000 times earnings, even including the deferred revenue as profit. I can't fault anybody for excluding regulatory credit revenue. That's obviously not going to continue in perpetuity, like out to 2040. I do still expect it to have a pretty significant impact the next few years, and that is money that Tesla can use to grow their business, but it won't keep coming in forever. The larger points that we just walked through, though, are all still valid. Nonlinear revenue growth being hard to forecast, that having an outsized impact on the bottom line, and then that compounding effect from Tesla's current software situation. Regardless of any of this, though, all the circumstances do require growth, so you have to put whatever risk factors you see fit on that growth. If we hop back to that Goldman note, they outline six risks. So the first is that Tesla would no longer be the EV leader. Second, no significant software growth long term. Three, Model Y basically performs worse than expected in terms of capturing a market. Number four, difficulty ramping with the massive amount of vertical integration that Tesla utilizes. Number five, just COVID-19 ongoing risks there. And number six, global EV adoption. So personally, for me, 5 out of 6 of those are, you know, pretty minimal risks. I've said before that I think probably the biggest risk for Tesla over the next couple of years would be that fourth point there, just difficulty in ramping up production. I do think it's going to happen really fast for Tesla. I think it's going to give them a lot of cost benefits, but I think to argue the point that analysts may make is, you know, Tesla's doing stuff here that they haven't done before, and inherently there are risks to that, and we've seen that materialize a number of times in Tesla's past. The Model X was super delayed. The Model 3 had its challenges ramping up, and to get to the production rate that Tesla had aspired to never really happened out of Fremont, but for good reason. But I do think it's important to acknowledge that, and Elon does keep highlighting this as a risk. It seems like almost every opportunity since Battery Day that he has had, he's talked about how prototyping is easy, getting to mass scale production is something like 100 times harder. So I do think Tesla can get there. It may just be a little bit bumpy along the way. All right, well, didn't expect to get quite as deep into that topic, but let's move on to the S&P update here. This is coming from Bloomberg. In an article about market valuations for electric vehicle manufacturers, they included a snippet about funds that are benchmarked against the S&P 500 and what percent of those funds had positions in Tesla ahead of the S&P inclusion. So if we remember back to our inclusion spreadsheet, again, there was about $4.6 trillion in assets tracking the S&P 500, so literally just trying to match the returns precisely. And then there were about $6.6 trillion in assets that were benchmarked against the S&P 500. So they're really trying to outperform. They don't need to take a stake in Tesla, but some of them might, because if they didn't, Tesla would then be one of the reasons for variance between them and their benchmark. So Bloomberg here is writing about those benchmarked funds. They say, quote, among more than 1,200 mutual funds worldwide using the S&P 500 as their benchmark, $4.7 trillion, or 93% of them, disclosed no ownership in Tesla shares in their most recent regulatory filings, end quote. So if $4.7 trillion is 93%, that would mean the mutual funds they looked at were about $5 trillion in value. That's a little bit lower than what the S&P said at $6.6 trillion benchmarked against them. And as a reminder, when we talk about that number, that is really from the beginning of 2019. That's the most recently they've published those assets. So that could have changed. It's probably gone up. So I'm not sure what causes the variance for what Bloomberg is looking at here, but I think that percentage is the most important part of this, just showing that the vast majority of those benchmarked funds don't actually have any stake in Tesla yet. If they all bought the, you know, 1.4, 1.5% weight that Tesla is going to be in, that would be, you know, almost $100 billion in stock they'd need to buy at $593 per share. It's about 163 million shares. So of course we've talked about that, but I did just want to provide that update because I thought that number from Bloomberg was pretty interesting. All right, we'll stick with Bloomberg here. The next topic is on Tesla short sellers. So we heard again today from Jim Chanos. It's been a little bit since we've heard from him. He is still short Tesla. So Jim Chanos, famous for shorting Enron. He's been short Tesla for at least 5 years. He has compared Tesla's executive turnover to Enron, but obviously thus far has been wrong on the Tesla story. In the interview today, he said, quote, it's been painful, clearly, end quote, adding that he's never met Elon Musk, but if they had a conversation today, he would say, quote, I'd say job well done so far, end quote. So he has reduced his position, but is still short Tesla. Bloomberg says that he pointed out that Tesla's 5 straight quarters of profit are due to ding, 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 regulatory credit sales rather than cars. We've covered a bit of that in this episode, but there is even more to that story. I think Jim needs to watch my episode titled, No, Tesla Doesn't Need Regulatory Credits to Make Money. Can we also just take a second to rewind to a couple years back when the US federal tax credit still existed for Tesla, and that was the main argument against Tesla at that point, that hey, when that's gone, no one's gonna buy a Tesla, or hey, even with that incentive out there, Tesla still can't be profitable. It's just so weird that we don't hear those arguments anymore. Guess we'll just move on to Tesla's next supposed crutch, and never, never, ever, ever, never acknowledge anything that is actually temporarily suppressing Tesla's earnings. All right, we got to move on here before I get too frustrated, but we do have another short chiming in. This is Michael Burry on Twitter. This is one of the guys that called the collapse of the housing market back in 2008. He was played by Christian Bale in The Big Short. And this was yesterday, so many of you have probably seen this, but yesterday he tweeted, quote, so, had Elon Musk, yes, I'm short Tesla, but some free advice for a good guy. Seriously, issue 25 to 50% of your shares at the current ridiculous price. That's not dilution. You'd be cementing permanence and untold optionality. If there are buyers, sell that hashtag Tesla souffle, end quote. So not the first time that Burry has chimed in on Tesla around Battery Day. He called it a bubble. Strangely enough, both yesterday's tweet and the tweet around the timing of Battery Day have both been deleted. But the reason I didn't talk about this yesterday is because I have nothing more to add to it. I mean, see the first half of the episode for why I don't agree with a short. As for issuing 25 to 50% of shares, that would be like $150 billion to $300 billion, which is honestly a preposterous suggestion. Tesla can't spend money that fast. I mean, I guess if you're like him and you think the stock price is never going to be at these levels again or never going to go higher than this, sure, take advantage, but seems like a pretty silly suggestion to me. So let's move on. The last thing here is some news from Michigan. Not great news here for Tesla. Historically, Tesla hasn't been able to either sell or service vehicles in Michigan. That changed about a year ago with a settlement agreement. Unfortunately, some new legislation that has been introduced would change the language that was established in that settlement agreement, which my understanding would be would no longer allow Tesla to operate in Michigan. So this has gotten a lot of attention today, but the good news here is that this is not law yet. It has been passed by the House in Michigan, but it still needs to be passed by the Senate and then signed into law by the governor. So I do think it's unfortunate that it got this far, but hopefully it won't end up making it all the way. I would actually be kind of surprised, but it is something that we'll keep an eye out for. So with that, we'll close it out for today. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast, and I'll see you tomorrow for the Friday, December 4th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.